Coming up on this week's book show, Nathan Englander once again tackles the complexities of contemporary Jewish life in his new novel, Kaddish.com. When an atheist Orthodox father dies, he's called upon by his mother and sisters to perform the prayer for the dead, every day for 11 months. Reluctant, he hires someone from the title website to recite the Kaddish for him. Nathan Englander, on this week's book show. Welcome to the Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Pulitzer Prize finalist Nathan Englander once again tackles the complexities of contemporary Jewish life in his new novel. When an atheist Orthodox father dies, he is called upon his mother and sisters to perform the Kaddish, the prayer for the dead, every day for 11 months. Extremely reluctant, he decides to hire someone through the title website to recite the Kaddish for him. It is a novel about atonement, family and duty, spiritual redemption, and about the soul-sickening temptations of the internet. The new novel is Kaddish.com. It is published by Knopf, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Nathan Englander to the book show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a pleasure.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I adore this novel and very much enjoyed it, and I'm curious as to what brings you to a point in your life where you can write such a book, in the sense of one about loss. Is this triggered in any way by the loss of a parent, number one, and then, of course, the bigger issues of Orthodox and secular, and working out those issues as well?
That is an excellent question and a big one. And yes, I think it's triggered by time in that way when you talk about loss, which is, you know, my father passed away 10 years ago, and I think that amount of distance, that time, really allows one to reflect. But this book, it is obviously called Kaddish.com, and it's driven by this notion of loyalty to a parent and trying to get his father's soul back, and we can break all that down. But part of it, you know, as you already said, it's about, you know, this balance between religious and secular and faith in the modern world and God and the internet. And I think, you know, that really, really is the engine of the book. And I really think I got to that, you know, just through my own experience. You know, I was raised religious, and I'm very not religious and secular for a long time now. And basically my wife, my friends, everybody teases me about what a religious soul I have. You know, I'm really not religious. I don't do anything. I don't fast on Yom Kippur. But I feel like my wife is always catching me doing really extraordinarily, like, faithful things. She'll be like, I saw that. You know, so I think, you know, in life, we support people. If someone stops drinking and they're on their wagon, we're like, go with your journey, you know, whether they become religious or secular. Like, we're used to the switch where a person is one way and then they go to the other. But I thought about this notion about, again, getting made fun of for having such a religious soul as such a secular person. I thought, well, wouldn't it be normal? You know, wouldn't it be just as natural for me to be like, oh, yes, I've been secular for so long, but you know what? I miss that. Like, I really started to think of the notion of what would it be to switch back. And Larry in this book, who's the rebellious son, the radical son who doesn't want to have anything to do with religion or the community or this idea of home, you know, I thought, what about him waking up at, you know, age sort of, you know, 20 years later and turning black hat and becoming, you know, super, super religious again.
That idea of flipping back was fascinating to you.
You know, this book comes out, it's, you know, just in a couple of days, it's 20 years from when I started writing. It's my fifth book. And you start to see from, you know, the niceness of getting to talk to people like you, one starts to understand one's own themes. And I really am obsessed, as someone who grew up back to a religious life with, and again, America sort of losing the idea that there used to be a concept called right and wrong. You know, there was facts, there was truth, and then there was right and wrong.
Right.
But I've been living in the gray space for a long time and sort of tortured by it. And through all my books, my last novel from last year, Dinner at the Center of the Earth, that's, you know, the Israel-Palestine conflict and the Gaza War and everything in it. Everyone is someone else. Everything's a doubling. I'm really interested in the way people change and flip back. And that novel, which, you know, is a political, historical, magic realist, literary thriller with like seven timelines in five countries, I really thought, you know, back to time, how did I get here and where did I begin? And it took me back to my first book, you know, For the Relief of Unbearable Urges. And it just really made me miss that idea of the sacred and the profane. So I thought, what if I take the writer I am now and the person I am now and go back to where I began? And that's essentially also Larry or Shuley's journey in this book, someone who goes back to the beginning.
Larry is who we meet at the beginning of the book, and the book is broken up into four parts. So part one is Larry at his father's funeral, sitting Shiva, and you are then Larry is reminded by his sister about the Kaddish. So at that point, in just that first section where we meet Larry, that could have been one of the short stories that you've written in previous collections.
Oh, you're so nice. It feels that way. I have to say, like, I'm, you know, and I just saw Joyce Carol a few days ago at the Montclair Book Festival, but yeah. I've been telling people I've been turning into her. You know, like this, I mean, she's got 71 books, but it would take me, you know, years and years to do a rough draft. But this is the first novel. Like, it's what I love about the writing life is every book feels like the first book, and it's always this act of discovery. But this one, it's the first book that I did write the way I write a short story. It came to me like in a fever. You know, I rewrite for years and drive everyone crazy and wrestle over commas. But that first draft, it was, you know, 12 weeks. It was 3 months instead of 3 years. And I do feel like it has that short story pacing, especially in the front. But yeah, that's a real, you know, again, everything pulls back to politics. We want our brains back and our lives back. And, you know, but I really do feel this idea of tolerance. Like, I think about that a lot. Like, I don't want to be tolerated by anyone. I think it's insulting to tolerate someone else. Like, this idea of respect. My family is so religious and I'm so secular, and we, you know, respect each other. You know, my sister, you know, came to the reading last night, and my mom, like, and I thought about this notion of we make it work as a family, the religious secular divide. But that really was the, like, impetus for that first section. I was like, and what if it didn't work so well? Like, what if it's just a brick wall where the sister says, this is on you, brother, and he doesn't want to have it? Which is why, you know, back to the commentary on faith and technology, I feel like everything's inside that machine now. You know, if it's our love lives and our work lives and our entertainment lives, I was like, well, if he needs to fix something religiously, you know, back to making up the site Kaddish.com, I figured he'd also go there.
So in the first part, as I mentioned, we read about Larry. Second,
yes.
Third, and fourth, we read about Shuley. Same
yes.
guy. But there is a religious conversion there that comes in the second part of the book. What I find fascinating is all the dirty parts are in the first part.
Yes, then they are quite dirty. That was my, I show thing. You know, when you have a book, I always say, back to being Jewish, I tell my students, Jewish or not, like, when someone finishes a book, when it's published, generally you should tell a friend, just mazal tov, congratulations, nice work. It's when it's in draft form and there's time to fix things, that's when you roll up your sleeves. So I always, you know, I test, you know, my Israel-Palestine novel, I give it to an Israeli friend and a Palestinian friend, a religious, a secular, right and left, you know, you test it out. But yes, my family was like, this would be a lovely book, could you just take out all the dirty bits? But it's really not a book without those bits. But yes, that's, you know, also part of the modern world that sets up the pathologies and the guilt and, you know, part of Larry's tortured self, because it really is, he's, you know, this Jewish concept of tshuva, he's really trying to put things right, but he stumbles on the site after looking at porn, and that's also very much, we all know, inside the computers.
And once he becomes Shuley and we learn of his life, then the book takes on a much more orthodox tone, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's an organic subconscious way they build, but now that it's starting to be out in the world, I'm starting to be aware of that. Like, you know, I just did an event with Greenlight last night, my local, with Colson Whitehead, and I wasn't trying to fill a hole or anything, but it's a happy book, and there's not a lot of, we were talking about books, but it's a book where somebody literally, you know, goes back on the path to faith. It's quite, you know, yes, dirty in the front, but it really is, you know, kind of a sweet, pure journey. Like, that's the idea. Like, shouldn't we have the chance at redemption? That's what this book is about. You know, it surely ain't pitching religion. It's pitching one person's path. But for Shuley, it's this obsessive need to put things right. And as a fiction writer, like, I put myself in the book so much. But the idea of polishing and rewriting, the idea of, you know, staying on a path, of sticking things out, of journeys, and just trying to be ethical, you know, it really... I'm a little obsessed with those things, and they surely, go into overdrive in Shuley's life.
As you were just saying, you can see yourself very much in this book. You're very much a part of the novel. With that, did you have to unpack, if you will, deconstruct what it was about going from a very religious, orthodox wife to a secular one, to do the opposite, to understand what it was from the first part of the novel to the second part of the novel, where Larry becomes Shuley, of how he gets to that place, of what brings Larry to the place where he is with his wife and his children, and he is teaching, and how he got there.
So most writers, like, just to even talk about, like, the writing process, I feel like a lot of people start out with really, really thinly veiled books, and then they start to build up their writerly muscles and they start to move further afield. But for me, I'm really a private person. So, you know, my first story in that first book about dreaming of being a writer, I didn't set it in suburbia or in my tiny apartment, you know, in upper Manhattan. You know, I set it in a Stalinist work camp in 1952, you know, in the winter. Like, I used to go so far to get close. And, it was with, I guess it's my third book, with what we talk about when we talk about Anne Frank. You know, my sister and I used to play this, you know, who will hide me game, you know, like the Anne Frank game, like, in the event of a second Holocaust, which of our Gentile neighbors would protect us? And right. I just, how old was I, 40 or something, or 35? Like, I just hadn't even thought about it. Like, that's just how we make order of the world. And I was like, wow, that's pathological. Like, that is so crazy. And I think that should be a story. And that was maybe the first time where I consciously understood how much I could mind myself, and that it was okay to mind that world. And, you know, when you want to ask about someone making this flip, you know, the negative space in this book where it's suddenly, you know, we're 20 years later in a, you know, we turn a blank page and he's got a, you know, a beard and the belly and the black hat, you know, he's just like one of the rabbis that he grew up with, even teaches at his old yeshiva. And I think that, you know, when I talk about being 10 years from the loss of my father, like, I'm also a dad now, you know, I have a 4-year-old, and I think I'm probably about 3 weeks late from this, you know, like, I, you know, it's not that it's even coming up, it's that I have to figure out some answers now. Like, I may explore them in my work obsessively, but I just don't have to provide those answers. And I really think this idea, especially, I live in Brooklyn and we practice what we preach there. Like, there's so many holidays in my school. My, you know, daughter was just doing Holi, and it was Chinese New Year a couple of weeks ago, and we had Purim, and, you know, they did the Iranian celebration, you know, Persian celebration in school. Like, they're just, so much of that stuff is happening, and those questions are starting to come up. And I was like, you know, she knows we're Jewish, but I'm like, what am I going to teach her? Obviously, with my wife, like, what are the rules of our house? What do we actually believe? Seeing that rolling towards me in life made me think of a character who really, after just not wrestling with that stuff, just not facing it, pushing it all down, saying so definitively, this is not part of me. Like, what would it be for someone like that to really face themselves and say, actually, this is the way?
Do you think of it as a Jewish novel?
You know what? Like, then I, like, shoot through the microphone and, like, hop into your studio. Oh, there's that nice thing in Updike's A&P where, like, he's at the checkout and he slides right down the girl's voice, like, into her parents' living room. Yes. But it's, like, almost switching realities right now. If I'm anyone else looking at me, and if, you know, if they can see a Jewish writer with a Jewish novel, But for me, Nathan, that's talking to you, like, I'm American. I'm so many generations American. Like, I grew up in such a Jewish world. I live in a city. Like, to me, the world is like, you know, 97% Jewish. That's how it feels. I was in Moscow in December for book tour. It's like, I'm literally just barely through customs. And like the first, you know, my first dinner, I'm suddenly having like kosher Georgian food and there's Hasidim around and everyone's drinking whiskey and vodka. And I was like, that's one of the ideas in this book, is this idea of home and universal homes. Like, that's why the front is set in Memphis, because you know what? An Orthodox community, Long Island, Brooklyn, Memphis, Florida, drop it anywhere on the planet. If it's Ashkenazi Orthodox of a certain stripe, it's going to feel the same. Like, that's the continuity. So for me, I just tell stories about people. Like, I know every one of my books, I'm not like, that's why I don't want to be like difficult or ridiculous. Like, pretty much the concerns are Jewish, the stories are Jewish, but it is a world to me. It's a whole universe. And also as a writer, if a story isn't universal, it's just not functioning. And I do think, if I could have like a second more on it, it's like, I do think we just ask it about certain things. You know what I'm saying? If a author is, you know, LGBTQ, we'll be like, oh, can I read this book? Or if it's a gay book, or, you know, like, I mean, right. Or a Jewish book, like that idea, there's certain subjects where we ask the question. But, you know, I know Game of Thrones is about to launch. Like, nobody's at home being like, are you going to watch the new season? Will you be able to, like, I don't have a dragon. I've never seen a dragon. Like, you know, will I be able to understand? And I was like, you don't need it. So I feel like when it's fantasy or science fiction or just anything, if you're not Italian and you want to read a book set in Italy, we make these leaps. And I feel like the question, which is a fair question, and this book, it's almost scary to say, of all my books, like, this is the most Jewish of my Jewish books, which is insane because the other ones can't be any more Jewish. But I just feel like, in defense of universality and empathy, like, I've worked really hard as a writer. Like, a story just needs to flow. It needs to be an unbroken dream. And this book, it's really meant for you to just sit down and laugh, 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 and maybe cry at the end. But I really did build, back to that literary thriller, I really built the pacing. I just wanted people to disappear into this universe. And if you can't, then I have failed you, and send me your receipt.
Well, that's certainly not the case at all. And I have to say, the reason even I ask the question is because the book is so much about faith. It's so much about this person's journey and trying to make good on a mistake they felt they made early in their life. It is a central point, and I worry, I guess, for humanity, that not enough of us, you referred to it as a sweet book earlier, which I completely agree with you, that we don't crave that as much as we used to, and that scares me.
You know, I'm with you on that front, obviously, because it's all over this book. But yeah, that's, you know, why I wrote the last book about Israel and Palestine. I thought about that. I lived there for those so many years, and I moved there for the peace process, and I still want my peace back. But I thought, like, the empathy is, you know, America, we're torn apart, families as a nation. Like, the idea of feeling for the other, of sympathy and empathy, like, I'm fascinated with the notion. And I really did. I was like, what about that? What about this, you know, modernizing exactly that, you know, looking at the internet, looking at technology, like the .com of the book, like, what about taking these old school values and looking at them through our modern life? I mean, that's part of it. Like, the whole landscape is shifting. You know, that's really also one of the core things of this story. Like, when I was a rebellious kid and would get thrown, again, the most embarrassing kind of rebellious, I had like theological questions. I wish I was like ripping bong hits, but I wasn't. I was, you know, asking questions about the Bible. But like, even that idea of omniscience, you know, that used to be such a big ask of a religious kid, that like, God knows everything you've done, you know, no, God knows what you're doing now, you know, he or she knows, they definitely didn't say she, you know, what's coming, you know, like what your free will choices are. And I was like, you know, the internet's a brand new thing, but basically, if you, you know, walk by a, you know, if you walk into any store that's plugged in, if you've ever Googled anything, if you have a phone, if you've signed into Facebook once, like, pretty much, like, we've built beta God, you know, like we really, the internet, you know, the web really does know everything you've done. It knows right where you are. And if you open your, my Instagram feed pretty much knows what I'm hungry for or about to do 24 hours. I mean, the ads are so specific, it's creepy. And I was like, oh, you know, yes, I'm into both like these old ethical ideas, but I really do think there is a place for them in the new, you know, in our new world, whatever that world is going to be. But I mentioned the Israel book, and why I mentioned in relation to this one is like, I've really been thinking about novels. It's a John Gardner concept as places to reflect, to test values. You know, like when you ask me that question, that's like moving to me as author, because that's all I want to raise is for you to just, you know, I don't want to lecture. It's not didactic. I just, you know, it's what books do for me as reader, which is, you know, ask me the questions that make me wrestle with who I am, that make me think about that.
And with that said, and I obviously don't want to give anything away, but there's just a lovely way that you conclude the book that is just a beautiful ending. And it became cliche to have a happy ending. And now it seems we need them more than ever. And when you get one, it's just the most refreshing thing in the world.
Oh, that's really, that's so generous. And, you know, again, the book's been out for a day, so like so few people have read it. But, you know, that came up at the event last night, like someone with an early copy. Like, it's so nice for me to hear that because it surely isn't conscious. And I definitely love the dark ending. I mean, I spent, you know, almost a decade on my Argentina novel, which literally, like, it's so close to my heart, but pretty much steps on the reader's heart. It's a, you know, like, I go dark. But I don't know if it really did maybe come out of that need of what these last couple of years have felt like. But, you know, I call myself an optimistic pessimist. A little hope wouldn't hurt us, I think.
I'm interested in the specificity. There's a point where Shuly is searching and searching for a place. In that search, there is a loose map that he has. It's handwritten, drawn map. Did you have to see that? Did you have to know where he was going? Did you have
Oh, yeah. I'm already like jumping on the end of your question because I get so excited about that. I don't know if it's personality or education, like the chicken or the egg thing, but like I'm obsessed with continuity, with like the logic of a world. I teach at NYU and I'm just always yelling at my grad students. And it's what I was yelled at when I was, you know, what was yelled at me when I was a grad student, sort of. This is a Frank Conroy thing used to say, like, you can have a book where people can fly, but if you hold their heads under the water, they need to drown. You know what I'm saying? Like, there just have to be rules to your world. And yes, you can make up, you know, anything, but I'm so, so sensitive about, like, the rules of world visualizing. Yes, my walls are covered with maps. And, you know, like, for something like this, it's a mystical world, but it's so close to the neighborhood I lived in Jerusalem was kind of a mystical neighborhood. But yes, I literally can't even tell you. I have screen grabs and maps. Like, I worked this stuff out so hard. I spoke to this guy from MIT to talk about, you know, when they're making the hand-drawn map, like XY axes and, you know, and the history of location and the internet and, you know, and how Bill Clinton plays into, like, when these rules are being formed on the federal. It was just, yes, I go so deep and so crazy, even if I'm writing a fable. And it's one of my favorite things. It was one scene I was writing for a different book, and I was sitting with my editor, Jordan Pavlin, of 20 years, and I was like, well, if the balcony is aimed in this direction, like, technically you wouldn't be able to see that tree from this balcony if you were standing, like, on this hill in Jerusalem. And she was like, I have an idea. Why don't we market this as a novel, and then you'll be able to make some things up. But I really am a little resistant, even in a novel, to making things up. It really runs deep in me. Like, again, I can go so crazy. The Kaddish.com, the site, it's also bananas. But yes, every tiny little thing. My foodie friend, literally, I called a cookbook writer because I was just worried about the glisten on my, you know, sunflower seeds, like how you might roast them, how the sun might hit them, how the shells might reflect. Yeah, I go, it's really crazy. And the reader's not supposed to notice any of it, but it matters to me.
What about the religious elements, the prayers?
Yes.
I assume you have to get that right, too.
Which is kind of sweet, back to the Larry Shuly split. Like, here I am, as I said, a, you know, a secular fiction writer, you know, leading my very Brooklyn-y life, but why I love the physical book, and yes, it's very good. The Kindle's very good for my marriage. If my wife falls asleep first, she doesn't like a you know what I'm saying? Like you, I will read. I end up buying two copies, so it's not as bad.
Good.
So yeah, so I have my daytime copy and everyone's asleep copy. Books sit, they stay. Like I have my religious library that's on the shelf with my novels and the poetry and the history. Like, so I go to that. And the one person who should be thanked in this book that isn't my back to my religious family, there's a wonderful rabbi. Like, there's some hyper specific questions I had that I needed to understand because one of the things in the novel, when he signs up for this Kaddish.com site and gets someone to say the prayer, gets to say the Kaddish, to mourn for his father, like in the end, he's basically signing rights to his father's soul away. And there's this notion of the kinyan, like a Jewish contract, and then a Jewish idea of proxy, like the Shaliach Mitzvah. But like, yeah, I really, this guy, that he was so wonderful and so helpful in this, helping me think through the logic, the internal logic of the legalistic parts of Jewish law. But back to you mentioning the pornography at the front of the book, and there's some racy images. The nicer thing, and I checked with him, was I'm going to thank you by not thanking you by name. But yes, there was a very super helpful, very religious man who's too pious, I think, to let's see how the rest of the reviews are before you tie someone to the book.
Kaddish.com is not a real website.
No, it's not. I keep trying to buy it and they won't sell it. We got a kaddish.com, which is kind of funnier for someone who likes a joke.
Yes.
But yeah, somebody who owns the name won't sell the name. This has happened to me for all 20 years of my writing career. Sometimes stories, they have a sort of, I call it executing the inexecutable. And there's kind of a, like when a joke should stay as a joke and I want to make it a deep reality. I wrote a story about a Hasidic man who can't afford to pay for his little synagogue, but he has the long white beard and the big belly, and so he works as Santa Claus, to pay that Reb
Great
Kringle
story.
From the first book.
Yeah.
I have met pretty much every Jewish Santa in America. Like, if you dream it, I cannot even tell you how many Jewish Santas there are. Like, it's a sizable community, the Jewish Santa Club. Oh, but the point is, as soon as I wrote this book, as soon as I told people about the concept of this book, like, it was, I think, weeks later, my mother tore something out of the back of, like, the Jewish newspaper. And there are surely places to sign up, through the internet now, I think, and maybe find this. But yes, Kaddish.com is, maybe someone else can do better about buying that. But the idea of it, the idea of the proxy, is really, really old. Like, any Jewish listeners or people, who know folks who like, where you sell your leavened stuff, you sell your bread on Passover to a Gentile neighborhood, like that's a proxy. And the sweetest one, which was part of my life growing up, if someone's flying to Israel, you may give them $18 of charity and say, when you get to the Western Wall, give this to someone. And that is literally to protect them on their journey, because it's going to give them a safe drive and a safe flight. It's going to get them to the wall, because it's not about them anymore. It's that they're supposed to give charity for you and they are on a mission. And that really is something I took to heart with Shuli. Like, he's found someone to do his mission, and then the mission becomes his own.
When you look at how quick this came, has that reset things for you a little bit, do you think?
I'm trying to sit up straight and sound like a human being for the interview, but I'm a fiction writer. I'm wholly neurotic and worried. I always feel like, oh, well, it's 20 years. I've had a good run. Maybe, I don't know what, I'll be a brush salesman now. It's such a delicate thing. I don't believe in writer's block. Like, you can always work. Maybe writing a good story is hard. You can always spend the day writing a bad one. So yes, I always write. It's all I do. But the idea of a book coming that quick, I have no idea if it'll ever happen again. But I'm here waiting to receive it if one wants to come.
Nathan Englander's new novel is Kaddish.com. It is published by Knopf. A beautiful novel. I thank you very much for sharing with us.
Oh, I really had a great time talking. Thanks so much.
Great pleasure. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. And you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.